Recorded live at the WonkyWeeds.com studio, it's the Selling Out Show with your hosts, Nate Korzynski and David Chicharro.
Hello, 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 and thank you all for tuning in today. This is one of your hosts, Dave, and I'm going to skip the pomp and circumstance that is normally presented at the top of the show because I am the bearer of sad news, and I am very heartbroken to announce that my friend of 30-plus years and the co-host of this program, Nate Korzynski, passed away on December 22nd, 2023. Now, I did post about this on Instagram with a few pictures, and it was nice that a few folks sent out some condolences and stuff like that. You know, to be honest with you, it's not me that deserves them. It's his family that, you know, it's kind of hard to imagine, you know, because we're adults and we talk about adult things, and especially in this show where we can be a little bit lewd and crude and a whole lot of rude, but you know, he was their little boy, you know what I mean? And, that's who you should be thinking about if you, you know, if you're feeling a little upset about Nate's passing. As for me, as his buddy, and as I'd always say as we started the show, his partner in crime, you know, being friends with Nate has been an absolute pleasure. Knowing him for virtually my entire life. I mean, we met in high school. I guess you could say that's when life truly begins, right? That's when people are trying to establish their identities and what have you. And really, that's where the friendships or the bonds of friendships really first start blossoming, right? Because everybody's trying to figure out who the hell you are. So if you find a like-minded person who, especially if you think you're on the fringe of something, but they get you, it's truly special, you know? And I think that was the case with me and Nate, where we could just kind of, whether it's talking about music and kind of more obscure bands that maybe weren't necessarily in the mainstream, but we both dug them, or comedy troupes, or just jokes, man. Like, that was one of the greatest things about Nate, is I love the way the dude laughed. You know what I mean? It's like, with any friendship, any family member, anybody you know, there are going to be ups and downs, right? I'm a tough person to love. I know there's been periods in my life where I was virtually impossible to for anybody to care about me. And Nate has some stretches of that too. And to any listener of the show, for all the years that we've been doing this, I want to say it's been 5 years now. No, Nate had some problems, you know. He was very candid and talked about them very publicly on the Selling Out Show. And so sometimes when those kind of things creep in, you're like, man, you know, those rough times or the more difficult times. It's like when I hear him laugh or I think about his laugh, it's like my chest feels like a bank vault filled with $1 million. You know what I mean? Like, you just feel good and everything else just goes away. So what I decided to do today is I kind of did a dart throw. I was like, I want to play some clips of Nate and I want you to hear him laughing. I want you to hear him talking about things. Now, is this a best of? Absolutely not. Did I pick clips that Nate probably would have wanted? God, no. No. I mean, it was, I just called it a dart throw for a reason, because I write the synopsis for the episodes, but I'm terrible at remembering what's on them, you know? So I kind of just went through the archive and I was just like, this one, what about this one? What about that one? And then I picked a couple clips to play for you today. And to be honest with you, I think Nate would be kind of pissed about a couple that I chose to play. But whatever. What are you going to do? Because I liked them, you know? The person and the clips. So there you go. Now, you know, it's tough losing a friend, like I just mentioned, you're really tight with, and someone that you really think that understands you so well, you know, because that can never be replaced. And I'm sure there's going to be times in my life where I want to shoot him a text or send him some weird meme or just, I don't know, to say something to him. And he's not going to be there. It's not available to me anymore. And that's what I'm going to feel sad the most, I guess. You know, and it's always going to be some goofy ass thing. Always. Because that's just how me and Nate communicated. But as for right now, yet again, I'd just like to play a couple clips, remember him, and if it's not the clip that you wanted to hear, like I'm pretty sure Nate probably wouldn't wanted me to play in tribute, that's fine, because I am lucky that we've had these last handful of years to record basically all of our conversations. All these just off-the-cuff, spitballing, shooting the breeze kind of conversations we had, and it's great to have those out there on the internet. So if you do want to remember Nate, go back and listen to him. I'll never take him down. They'll be there forever. So as long as the electricity's on, Nate will be there for you. It's kind of a cool thing, you know? And I mentioned me doing the whole, like, just kind of random picking of clips. Go back and then maybe you have a favorite episode. Check it out again, you know? Listen to him talk about whatever. And this one, I don't want to spoil anything because there's a couple things that listening back to him the other night when I picked them, I was laughing. And, you know, for me, it's hard to get me to chuckle, but to hear Nate talk, hear Nate yet again laugh and just goof around, you know, created quite the response for me. And I wasn't sad. I was happy because there he is, man. It's like he's hasn't gone away. Now, as for the future of the Selling Out show, it will go on. For a while, I think it's just going to be me. Will I ever get a new co-host? Because, I mean, really, Nate's irreplaceable. And that's no baloney, but that's legit, you know? So who knows what the future will hold. I'm not going to say yes or no, whatever. Make myself look like a fucking hypocritical liar here. But there were some bits and some subject matter topics and what have you that Nate and I had discussed that we didn't get on air yet. And I'd like to continue with that. So I will. I was even kind of torn if I wanted to play the intro on this show. But yeah, you know, there we go. Presuming what someone would like when they're gone. Because that's what people do when their friends die. They want me to keep going. That's what they would have wanted. I just figured Nate would have been like, yeah, fuck it. It's my last episode, really. You know? This is it, man. This is my last hurrah. Play the intro. Let's do it, baby. So, yeah. Enough with me blabbering on like a moron. It's going to suck because I always had Nate to reel me in and correct my grammar and tell me when I was saying something completely off the wall or incorrect. So it's rough not having him around, definitely for that. Podcast-wise, I'm going to... That's the truth. But, so yeah. I will miss him terribly. He's provided me with more memories than one person should ever be allowed to have. Good and bad, but mostly good. And hopefully he brought a little bit of joy to you out there. So here they are, a few clips remembering my good dear friend and yet again partner in crime, Nate Gorzinski. Actors is something else. I don't know.
You know who's not from Massachusetts is Tony Danza.
Oh,
I you know, Carly, my girlfriend, has been watching his new show on Netflix called The Good Cop, where, you know, Tony Danza plays this guy that he was a cop, but he went to jail for, he was corrupt and he comes out and this, I don't know. He and he helps solve crimes. I don't know the whole story. Carly watches it. I came in and
I mean, it's explained in the title. He's a good cop.
He's a good
right?
cop, but he was a bad cop.
Yeah.
You know, he's a good bad
cop. Oh, no.
He's not, he's not afraid to like, you know, kind of toe the line of the law. He's just, you know, he's whatever. The plot is not.
Because he's Italian.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You know, that's a stereotypical Italian thing, right? You're a tough guy, badass. Hey, Tony Soprano ain't got shit on me.
I want to talk more about the name Tony because Tony Danza on that show, The Good Cop, his character's name is Anthony Caruso. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I look back and I'm like, what is the first thing I remember Tony Danza from? And it was the show Taxi back in the day. You know, yeah. Danny DeVito and Andy Kaufman.
Christopher Lloyd. Sure.
Yeah. And his character on that was named Tony Banta. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I remember him from Who's the Boss, of course, with Alyssa Milano, whatever, Judith Light. And his character, his name was Tony Maselli. And I'm starting to think, does this guy like, did he have a problem realizing that he was playing a character with a different name? Like somebody would call his name in the lines and he just had no idea. And they had to start naming all his characters Tony so he would know that they were talking to him. You know?
That first table read was a rough one. They were like, this guy's not paying no damn attention. What's going on? The other thing about Tony Danza that you may not be aware of is he got in a little trouble with the law.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Apparently, he was harassing the group Tony, insisting that he was one of the vocalists, but he apparently couldn't sing, and they just couldn't get rid of him. He's like, I belong here.
It should be Tony.
Come on.
But so I'm like...
Angela, Mona.
Angela, Tony. Jonathan, Mona. That was my...
You forget the best one. I was waiting for you to do it.
Samantha.
Tony, but yeah, that's
going back.
That's good. Imagine that. Every job you got, they just say, you know, we're going to make it a little easy on you.
Hey, you know.
We're going to keep one thing as a constant, one thing the same that will never change. And Mr. Danza, what would you prefer that to be?
Well, I got a tough time acknowledging someone would call me by a different first name. Last name is fine, because who the hell uses a last name? My first name, though, you got to call me Tony.
Yeah, but your name on the show is Anthony.
Oh, yeah, Tony short for Anthony, you moron. So you never say Anthony. All you got to do is say Tony.
You got it, Danza. I'm using these short names for everybody.
Dude.
Danza.
I tell you what, I was that doing hurt. Some research after noticing this, and I was like, oh, okay. So then there was a show called The Tony Danza Show, but it was... Yeah. And so, of course, he was playing Tony in that. There was one in 2004 that was like a talk show. So he was just like, it was a morning show type thing where he talked, had guests on.
He played himself.
Yeah, he was himself, Tony, again. So I'm like, okay, that counts. So then I noticed there was another Tony Danza show. It was same name, The Tony Danza Show, in 1997, which was a sitcom. And it was one of those shows where it's like, it's called The Tony Danza Show, but his name isn't Tony Danza on it. But it's Tony DeMio. He played a character named fucking Tony again.
This is nuts. This is terrible. Oh, my God.
And then there was, just to cap it off, there was a reality show, I guess, in 2010 called Teach Tony Danza.
Yeah.
Like Teach colon Tony Danza. And... Tony Danza, it's a reality show where he becomes a teacher. He's got like students in a class. They like give a class of students to this fucking actor. And he's like, it shows how tough a teacher has it and how much you're influencing young minds and like where the legal issues that pop up for different things. And like he's got, you know, just shit like that. And it's really, I guess it was really interesting. It was voted like one of the most important shows of the 2000s or whatever.
By whom?
But anyway.
It's voted on by Tony Danza.
Yeah. But he's Tony again. Okay. He's Tony in it, you know?
Well, yeah. I was like thinking right now, like a student's like, hey, excuse me, Mr. Danza, can I use the bathroom? Hey, kid. Sure you can. But first you got to call me.
Call me Tony.
You don't call me Mr. Danza. That was my dad.
You know, earlier I just mentioned you could become a great domesticated pet for an alien.
That's
like,
right.
Like Porno for Pyros sang about way back in 1993,
yeah,
if anybody remembers. Pets. We'd make great pets. But you are a pet lover. We have discussed this many times before at great lengths. Yet, you haven't encountered a new problem with some of your furry friends.
Mm. Some would call it a problem. Some would call it a solution, Dave. I don't know. I have these two rabbits. Like, I've got a million pets I've mentioned before. We have horses,
right,
a dog, cats, all kinds of shit. And we have these two bunnies that honestly sit there in cages and, like, you know, they don't interact because they're in separate cages. But recently I've been like, let's let these guys hang out. Their cages seem kind of like boring. And we have this pen that we can put on the grass. It's just like a fence that you can connect to itself in a ring. So they're both in there, but I would put a partition wall of like a fencing, almost like a chicken wire-ish fencing, a little thicker than that, but between them, because they've never lived together. They've been separate cages. So I figured let's put them, you know, put a little separation in between them so they
can
sniff each other. But it, you know, before they just dive into life together. But anyway, that little partition in the middle is a little lower than the surrounding ring. Like it's a shorter wall between them, if you will. And, you know, I mean, they've been out there a couple days. You know, I'll put them back in their cage at night so foxes don't get them or whatever. But I put them out there during the day, and they've been out a few times and it's never been a problem. But today I go inside after putting them out, and I look back a few minutes later, and one of the rabbits has somehow gotten over that little partition and is banging away at the other brother like a rabbit having sex, you know, like you would imagine. It's fucking bunnies. That's what they do. But I was just like, you know, I immediately run out because my initial instinct is these dudes are actually brothers. So this is kind of fucked up in all kinds of levels, you know. I have no problem with gay bunnies. They're both males. But, you know, brothers is, you know, it's a taboo I'm not willing to to just, like, turn the other way right. You know, I had some questions. So I ran over and I, like, grabbed one of them off the other one and put him back on his side. I'm like, oh, maybe, you know, I reinforced the wall a little bit so it wouldn't tip over as easily when he put weight on it. And I go inside. I make sure they're fine for a while. Nothing's happening. I go inside. The same thing happens. So, you know, long story short, I could not keep these bunnies from fucking. And, you know, love will find a way, as they say.
Yes. Apparently, apparently that's the case.
So, you know, I figured, like, if one of them is always going to jump into the other one's side anyway, and they're both on that side, which is half the size of the thing, I might as well just take the fucking wall out. So they're going to be together anyway. Now they'll have more room, just like, you know. So
for their incestuous love fest, you just gave them more room to romp.
Well, I wanted to make sure I was safe first. I'm like, not that I was safe, that the bunnies were safe. So I felt fairly secure, you know, in this whole scenario. But I look up, is it, you know, will bunnies kill each other? Will two male rabbits murder each other if you leave them alone? And it was saying, you know, watch them, put them together, and they will fuck. They will bang and, like, establish dominance. And it's really disturbing to watch, but it's actually a positive thing because it's just a thing they have to do. And, you know, he's looking at me. He's like, sorry, man, I just got to do this. I know it's disturbing, but
don't look me in the eyes. Something I got to do.
The dude's an albino. He's red eyes and he's staring right at me while he's fucking his brother. It's just really creepy.
Oh, God. Yeah.
But I look it up and it's like, you know, they're supposed to do that more or less. They, as long as they're not, like, clawing at each other and, you know, bloodying each other up, and they, you know, they will stop eventually. And dude, you know what the article said? It said a lot of times they'll reverse mount each other, which basically means fucking each other in the face, like they'll climb on. and they said, you know, even that's fairly normal. It's just a dominant behavior, but the only danger is if the rabbit, like, chews off the genitals of the other one. And I'm like,
wow,
Jesus, that, you know, and which did not happen, you know, spoiler alert, this all ended pretty blood free, just, you know,
two bunnies laying around smoking butts, fucking post-coital bliss. This is...
Dust off your LPs. It's time for Nate's notes.
Being an avid music fan as a teenager ensured that I had some questionable role models. I've pointed out in other segments that I don't blame any musical artists for the bad choices I've made in my life, but the heroes I chose to look up to often came with their own share of baggage. My own drug history took the predictable turns down from marijuana through hallucinogens and psychedelics, through the neighborhood of amphetamines and tranquilizers, of eventually ending up stranded in the wasteland of heroin addiction. But in the beginning, it was a fun, leisurely stroll, and the scenery seemed really bright and vivid. I remember listening to music when I was a pot-smoking teenager, and even more so when LSD or mushrooms came into play. The chemicals added another dynamic aspect to the music. It created this sort of synesthesia effect where the sounds had a tangible shape to them. Not surprisingly, I gravitated towards bands that made these soundscapes, like whole environments made of noise, rather than standard verse-chorus-verse songs. Electronic acts like the Future Sound of London or The Orb were like sculptors of sound, and even without a head full of acid, you could get lost in the worlds contained in their albums. But honestly, listening to the Lifeforms album by Future Sound of London, or Orbis Terrarum by The Orb while tripping on psychedelics, or even just when really stoned, I would say is more engrossing and entertaining than most movies that exist. It was virtual reality before virtual reality was a thing. The years went by, I started writing music with friends, and we usually at least tried to carry that influence of psychedelic audio world building into our own music. To this day, it takes a certain type of person to really appreciate the music that I'm most proud of making, because it's not usually listener-friendly verse-chorus-verse stuff. I've definitely written my share of simple, catchy songs when I was in certain bands, but the stuff I really work hard on and take the most pride in requires some attention and reacts better with a mind that's at least been a little tenderized by psychedelics. The thing is, my curiosity and excitement for these substances got the better of me. If I had just stopped at the level of hallucinogens, I think I'd have been more or less okay in the long run. I still don't regret any of the tripping I did back then, and actually, I think most people would be well served by at least one or two excursions into the psychedelic world. But I guess I figured in for a penny, in for a pound. And I wanted to see what the fuss was all about with the other drugs I'd heard about. People had told me that these beautiful hallucinogens were deadly and not to be trifled with, so maybe the colloquial knowledge surrounding all these illicit substances, the other ones, is also overstated and kind of bullshit. Well, spoiler alert, some of the shit people warn you about is actually true. So no matter how brave of a psychonautic explorer you consider yourself, maybe tread into the waters of opiates a bit more carefully. Or better yet, maybe just avoid them altogether. I started using heroin at 17. It also had a profound effect on my relationship with music. I felt more connected to the songs I'd listened to. I felt like I was writing more passionately. In the beginning, heroin seems to make you more sensitive, which is ironic because it actually numbs you. And in the end, you lose pretty much all passion for anything except the drug itself. And it didn't take that long for me to start noticing that shit. I started being late for band practices or missing shows because I was perpetually waiting for my dealer. Anyone who's been there can tell you that you end up spending a huge amount of your life as an addict just waiting for these assholes who take your money and sell you your own death, and then on top of it, they make you wait all fucking day for it. And you can't just say, screw it, I'm leaving, he's taken too long, because without the drug, you're a puking, shitting mass of raw nerves. And you can't do much until he gets there. It's not like I consciously said, fuck music, I like this shit better now. It's just that I got seduced by it, and the lifestyle of a junkie makes it hard to commit to anything, even if it's the thing you've dreamed about since you were a kid, listening to records. I tried to make it work. I remember when we had our first big chance to go out with a tour bus,
opening for a couple of national acts. We had played with some bigger names, but now we were actually traveling around, spreading our music to places we've never been, in front of bigger crowds, because we're opening for established acts. And I tried to stock up on enough dope to last the whole trip. Seems like it would be just a matter of taking what you usually do daily and multiplying that by how many days you're going to be gone, right? Well, again, any addict can tell you this. If you have more on you, you're going to do more. It's addiction, you know? Feeling good after a set, you end up doing another bag. Feeling a little extra hungover in the morning, do an extra bag. An addict doesn't need to look hard for a reason to use. So before you know it, you've got some shows left to do and you don't have the medicine to get through. That's when you either have to perform sick as a dog, or you have to try to cop dope in a strange city, avoiding arrest and avoiding people selling you fake shit, all that good stuff. Or you have to cancel the gig. Either way, the drugs are getting in the way of the band performing. And the sad thing is, usually as an addict, eventually you start looking at it like, well, all these responsibilities I have are getting in the way of my drug use. It's fucked up. This dream I had ever since I was a kid that seemed to be taking shape. I don't want to oversell it. We weren't like on our way to becoming rock stars or anything, but things were happening. We were making money. We were making connections, playing all the time. This thing everyone tells you is a far-fetched dream. And we were starting at least to do it. And I was watching myself piss it away. It wasn't the only issue in the band. Like, one guy was a pretty severe alcoholic. One worked at a pharmacy and had developed a bit of a benzo habit, pilfering Xanax and Klonopins from work. Only one dude was pretty much completely straight edge. And he must have just been tearing his hair out the whole time. When we finally broke up, I finally had the opportunity to pursue my drug use full time. So that's what I did. The next decade or so was pretty devoid of music, to say the least. And now my journey to get back to some kind of normal life has been uneven and full of ups and downs. I spent a lot of time locked up, as I mentioned earlier. And the last period of incarceration was back in 2013. Ironically, during that sentence, I met someone who has been instrumental in getting me back on the horse, musically. At the time, I had long hair and a beard. The other inmates would call me Big Jesus. Big because there was also a little Jesus. I started talking to my fellow savior, who naturally also had long hair and a beard, but he was a bit shorter than me, hence Little Jesus. It was interesting because he was the first person in all my years locked up that shared my love for a lot of the same somewhat obscure bands. Plus, he told me he also played music himself. More coincidentally, this guy was wrapping up his sentence the same week that I was, so he invited me to get together with him and some other friends the weekend following our release. As it turned out, we all click very well musically, and we've been playing shows together ever since. I still find it odd that my reintegration into making music, which was once so important to me, started with a chance encounter behind bars. And weirdness upon weirdness, Little Jesus shared more than his jailhouse moniker with me. His real name also just happens to be Nate, like me. I'm not someone who believes in signs or cosmic messages or whatever, but it's not lost on me how cool the whole thing is, and it's been really nice playing out again, you know, creating with like-minded people some organized noise, and feeling fulfilled artistically for the first time in years. It's been really cool, man, you know, like, it's interesting how it all turned out, but...
You know what, though? Yeah. Fuck that. Fuck all of that, Nate.
Oh, yeah?
Fuck that. No, I'm just playing the fucking devil's advocate here. But no, you know, one thing you mentioned in the beginning there was maybe you should try hallucinogenics.
Yep.
And to that I say no. No one ever try tripping your balls off, because whenever I think of those, whether it was LSD, or I remember one time we tried this stuff, what was it called? Saliva?
Salvia.
Salvia, thank you. And man, that fucked me up like nobody's business. I still think of the scene from The Golden Child where he sees hell, he sees his dear sweet brother Noomsy,
yep,
just clapping as fire burns around them.
My dear sweet brother Noomsy!
That fucking happened to me! That shit really happened to me. Like, I experienced that. That's No, I do not recommend that for anybody.
Well, see, I think it all depends. It depends on the person, but you, you at least tried it. You must have also had a few positive experiences. I know you and I did our share of tripping together, and we did a lot of laughing. We did a lot of talking. Yeah. You know, there are some good experiences, and that's what I'm saying. I think people under the right circumstances can do positively with that mind-opening effect. But I just, again, I take things too far. If I had stopped at that point, who knows? Maybe I would have been that dude who just trips every day and ends up like being some wasteoid that doesn't do anything but trip because I'm an addict. But the fact is, I went on to bigger and badder things, and I just, it ended up robbing me of potential. Like, I don't feel comfortable talking like complimentary to about myself, but people would tell me that, like, you know, Nate, you're good at this music thing. You're talented. You're somebody that could do something with this. And instead, I just got fucked up all the time. And I know I disappointed people in my band as well as everyone in my life, but you know, that's something I got to live with now. And I'm just trying to like enjoy what I've got now, which is I play in a band with these dudes. We have a lot of fun. I write music on my own. I talk about music here. We do this podcast. I really enjoy it. I'm glad that you and I, you know, are still doing something creatively together. I don't know. I'm glad to have this sort of second chance, albeit, you know, 20 years later. But
Some people don't get that. They really don't.
That's what I'm saying. So,
and I remember we'd be playing a gig and be like, hey, where's Nate?
Yeah.
Oh, I think he's passed out in the shitter.
Yeah. Well, dude, I was specifically referring to that when I mentioned how the drugs would make me miss gigs and things. You and I had this band that, you know, we were lucky enough to play some really fun shows. And the first one was like legendary. I still think about it like it was, we referenced it on another episode where we were talking about how I was naked on stage and we were doing all kinds of crazy shit. And the second gig should have been just as fun, but instead I was out of drugs, so I had to go meet my dealer. And I remember waiting for this little asshole to sell me dope, and I'm sitting in my car miles from the gig and thinking, I gotta be on stage in 10 minutes, he better hurry. And then thinking, I gotta be on stage in 2 minutes, I'm not gonna make it. And then thinking, I should have been on stage 5 minutes ago, man, but this asshole's still not here. And I think I got there in time for us to go on stage for like 5 minutes. But that's what I'm talking about. I was more concerned with like getting my fix. And that's just par for the course. It's just what that drug does to you eventually.
Again, maybe it's not the opiates per se, but I remember not being able to do anything unless I was drinking and talking about music.
Yeah.
We'd have band practice. And I just want to get fucking as cocked as humanly possible before I even started doing something.
Yeah.
It was like, and I was a complete mess. So you guys were like, well, you know, we're just going to do the music and jam over here and Dave can come up with lyrics later. And by the time I was ready, I couldn't even speak.
Right. Yeah. You're like, I need to get drunk enough to play. But then it was a fine line before you were too drunk to play, you know? It's like,
yeah.
So
I had an uncle who was a guy who was in bands throughout the 80s and stuff. And he saw us and he mentioned to me, he's like, you guys are fucking up. Of course, you never listened to your elders at that point in time. But he was saying, like, you think you're rock stars, but you haven't made it yet. You guys are all about getting fucking wasted and getting girls and being cool motherfuckers. But that all comes in time.
Right.
Focus on the music now. And I really wish, in hindsight, with many, many things, as you even, you know, talked about with your Nate's notes, it could be applied in every area of life.
Right.
We had done such a thing and focused more, kept our eye on the prize and less about the substances and being fucking, you know, the party guys.
Right.
And that's what it was, because another thing I noticed was at first it's fun, right? Everything's fun. You're cool to hang around. People want you at their party because you tell good jokes. You get fucked up and you're a funny dude. You, me, or whoever we're talking about.
Yeah.
But then over time, it degrades into the point that nobody fucking wants you around.
Right.
They don't even want to be around you anymore because you're not funny anymore. You're not cool. You don't say any interesting quips anymore. Yeah. You're just a mess.
Yeah.
You're a mess.
Yep. Yep. It's like I said, it's par for the course. It's just what happens eventually. It's funny. I remember your uncle saying that. Like, I still think about that thing that your uncle said about, you know, what are you guys doing? You're doing it backwards. You're supposed to make the music and make it first and then do the party in. And if you want to overdose and die later, go for it. But wait till you're famous first, you know,
yeah, put some money in your pocket before you keel over.
Yeah, man. But
no, he was right. Yeah. But you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's a positive way to look at it. Yeah. As you just said it.
Yeah.
Now you jam, you do your band, yep. You have your podcast, yep. You know, me and you have a lot of fun doing this creatively.
Right.
And in many ways, we're super lucky to be able to do such a thing because we know a lot of people who didn't get that opportunity.
No, you're absolutely right, though. Too many of us have, you know, fallen by the wayside and died too young. So, yeah, I don't know. I think out of some negative subject matter, that's a pretty positive way to wrap things up is that, you know.
Yeah,
appreciate
totally.
What you have now because a lot of people don't have, you know, even this. So
yeah, no, it's true that you get told when you're a little kid, like enjoy your vegetables because some kids don't have their broccoli or something. You're like, fuck you. What are you talking about? Broccoli sucks. But in the end, it's all pretty good. Just be able to have something, whatever it is, man, you know, a roof over your head, a pot to piss in, or even a fucking podcast or just an outlet to be able to speak your mind to a group of people. It's
right.
Wonderful
and I love so. Broccoli. So,
all right. And to remind everybody, if you ever want to reach out to us, I gave you the phone number earlier. That's 774-701-1993, which was a great year. And you can follow us on Twitter at Selling Out Show or just send us an email, sellingoutshow@gmail.com. I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. I appreciate the hell out of it. Virtual hugs for all of you. See you later.
We love you. Wake up. It never looks